From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. When Governor Hogan declared Maryland's opioid overdose epidemic a state of emergency in March, he put his senior advisor on emergency management in charge of the fight. We speak with Clay Stamp about the frightening scope of the emergency, the efforts of the unit he leads, the Opioid Operational Command Center, and the prospects for making addiction treatment more available. Part of his job, Stamp says, is to identify good approaches already used by various schools and localities around the state, like this promising initiative in Anne Arundel County.
All you have to do is go knock on the door of a fire station, and you can get treatment. Everybody in their communities knows where their firehouses are, right? That's the best practice. We could spread that throughout Maryland.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The toll of the opioid epidemic is frightening. In 2015, the U.S. DEA reported more than 52,400 deaths from drug overdoses nationwide, the majority from opioids. Drug and alcohol intoxication deaths in Maryland soared by about 50% in 2016. Opioids, both prescription and illicit, were involved in the deaths of 1,438 Maryland residents in the first 9 months of 2016. Since 2010, deaths from heroin use have tripled. In March, Governor Hogan signed an executive order declaring a state of emergency in response to the opioid crisis. He announced $50 million in new funding over the next 5 years to support prevention, recovery, and enforcement efforts. Governor Hogan put his senior emergency management advisor, Clay Stamp, in charge of the statewide effort. Stamp directs the Opioid Operational Command Center, the OOCC, which was created in January. Clay Stamp is with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Hello, Sheila. It's good to be here with you.
You took part in a regional summit last week. Governor Hogan joined Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe and Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser at the Regional Opioid and Substance Abuse Summit in Linthicum Heights. What did you learn?
So, Sheila, as I was asked by the governor to lead this effort, and what I continue to learn, I learned at the summit, as I travel the state of Maryland, is the magnitude of the situation we're facing. Whether I'm in Western Maryland, far reaches of Western Maryland, or the Eastern Shore, it's affecting more people than you would imagine. I go into forums and ask people to raise their hands for those who have been affected, either directly or indirectly, and the whole audience oftentimes raises their hands. So the magnitude is significant. At the same time, I'll say it's amazing to see the groundswell of interest in our community, people coming together and recognizing the significance of the crisis and wanting to make a difference. And that's why the governor's call to action through a declaration of a state of emergency is so important, because it is a call to action to bring that emergency management system into play, that organization that we as the United States of America depend on in the most gravest of times, to pull all the smart people together, to develop a strategy, to develop initiatives to affect whatever emergency we're dealing with. And right now, this is truly a crisis we're dealing with.
I think a lot of us have a hard time connecting the declaration of a state of emergency with what you just made reference to, people wanting to do something to end this tragedy that's unfolding.
Exactly.
Walk me through some of what it means to declare a state of emergency, what that means in terms of actually affecting outcomes.
Right. The declaration of a state of emergency is a call to action, an all-hands-on-deck approach to dealing with whatever crisis faces us. It's to wake the community up to say, this is threatening our very being. We have to pull every resource we have together to address it. And so on the federal level, that's centered under the Federal Emergency Management Agency at the National Operations Center. In the state, that comes through the Maryland Emergency Management Agency. In every local jurisdiction in Maryland, there's an emergency manager. Day in and day out, they're involved in their communities. In this case, we have a public health emergency. So this system The emergency manager and all the committees and groups that they work with are wrapping services around the public health service, because it's a public health emergency, and coordinating efforts. So what that means at the local level is that all the folks out there that are trying to raise awareness in each local emergency center where they're coordinating actions, they'll come up with common messaging. We share details. We share educational information so that we're informing people. We identify effective initiatives in one part of Maryland that we can share with all jurisdictions. Best practices, for example, in schools. You know, we may have an education program that's working very well in Charles County school system, that we share that with the other school systems that they can pick up on that. And so it really is an effort that we can get really smart people involved at the federal level, the state level, and we can funnel information and resources to the local level where you make that difference every day, right? And that's in the form of money, that's in the form of information to deliver our effort to stem the tide of this crisis in the area of prevention, enforcement, and better access to treatment, because addiction is a disease and these are real people that need to be treated.
Well, let me pick up on that. I want to get back to several points you made, but specifically on treatment. I feel like I've been hearing for years, as this crisis grew, that we need more treatment. We need treatment at the point when somebody who uses realizes they need treatment. That's the point to get them into treatment, not to tell them, okay, great, in 8 weeks we'll have a slot for you. Has Maryland changed the availability of treatment significantly since you've been on this assignment?
Sure. And I'll do my best to answer your question. But what I will say is that there are some best practices already occurring in Baltimore City, recognizing there's a vulnerable population. Last year, we had 23,000 emergency room visits for non-fatal overdoses. These are people that overdosed but did not die in our emergency departments. And a number of hospitals in Baltimore and are working with the Maryland Hospital Association. We're in the process of developing a standardized discharge protocol for all non-fatal overdoses in all 49 emergency departments across Maryland that will recognize that we have these individuals that may have higher propensities to overdose again and hopefully not be fatal. But we have them right there in that emergency department at that time. So when they're discharged, that we discharge them with naloxone, that we discharge them.
Which is the substance that can counteract.
Exactly. Discharge them to a peer support, potentially discharge them to a treatment program to try to show them that there are options. Those 23,000 that we saw last year, and so far this year, there's about 8,000. We're averaging about 50 to 60 a day across Maryland. So that's one area where we're seeing best practices in Baltimore City right now, and we want to spread that throughout the state.
Let me pursue specifically. We were talking about treatment, and I noticed you use the adverb potentially discharge them to treatment. I read into that, but you tell me if I'm wrong, that in many cases a treatment placement is not available when somebody leaves the emergency room.
So while that and the patient may not be ready for treatment. So, I mean, there's still a conscious decision as to whether they're going to enter treatment or not enter treatment. And certainly our goal is to be able to direct them toward available treatment. And so, you know, it's clear that in this country, in the last number of years, the access to addiction services has been somewhat marginal. And if you look at the statistics since 2012 till now, they've skyrocketed. And the system that we did have certainly is in need of expansion. So right now, we're looking at the resources we have. We're positioning ourselves in the state to be strategically placed for hopefully federal support. To begin expanding our treatment capacities.
That is Clay Stamp here on the record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass. Clay Stamp is Senior Emergency Management Advisor to Governor Larry Hogan. And we're talking about the state of emergency declaration regarding the opioid addiction and opioid overdose crisis. How much of the $50 million in funding that got a lot of attention when Governor Hogan declared the emergency in March, how much of that will go to treatment?
Well, at this point, I mean, at this point, the governor, we're at the OOCC, the Opioid Operational Command Center, we are tasked with working with all of our local jurisdictions, determining what the needs are, finding the gaps, and then putting together a spending proposal for the governor's consideration. In addition, working with the legislation that we were given, the HOPE Act that the legislature put together to address issues relative to prevention, enforcement, and treatment collectively. With regard to the weighting of the funding at this point in any one direction, we're just not at that point yet.
The state of emergency declaration was spurred by the initial fundings of the OOCC, the Opioid Operational Command Center, that had just been established a couple months earlier. Tell us what the OOCC does and what those findings were.
There was a recognition by Governor Hogan that this was truly a crisis. He talks about when he was campaigning for office, and he went out and talked about the economy and such. And what he kept hearing everywhere was, we have a terrible problem with this opioid problem. And he heard it everywhere. And the governor and the lieutenant governor made it their mission to really work on this issue. And the lieutenant governor put together a task force and came up with 33 recommendations. And part of that process, they realized that they needed to, number one, recognize the level of the crisis, but two, to take some extraordinary actions. And that was declaring the state emergency and actually taking all state agencies. Right now we have 12 and soon to be 17 state agencies, basically putting them in a room and saying, okay, we've given authority to the governor's representative, which is myself, to cut through red tape, to find opportunities to break down stovepipes of state government. And so we're very rapidly mobilizing to do that. I'm happy to say that at this point in time, our organizations at the state level and at the local level are starting to really gel. There's a lot of energy on the local level, but my assessment is that energy was kind of all over there, spread out. And we're starting to focus that energy, and we're starting to communicate and drive out gaps. And I'm happy to report that there's a lot of promising practices that we see out there in certain portions of the state that we're going to start sharing. We're moving very quickly to develop an immediate action plan. And that immediate action plan will identify specific initiatives in those three areas to drive forward in the next year. And as we do that, we're building out a five-year state response plan that will look at other initiatives. And those will tie into the funding recommendations to the governor. And working with the legislature, we hope to make a difference in the areas of prevention, enforcement, recovery. And, you know, prevention is huge. Prevention is what is going to change the course. That's the good news. The challenging news is prevention does take time. We've seen it in this country. I say often that, you know, if you recall, smoking used to be cool. Well, it's not cool anymore. So our culture, you know, that was a big swing. So we can do that. We can change whether this is cool or not cool, but it's going to take a national effort, and it's going to take a lot of support from our federal government. That being said, we have to engage in the enforcement area, not at the street level. I mean, when we talk to our local police officers, and we have best practices occurring right here in Baltimore City with the LEAD program, police diversion, not arresting people to put them in the criminal justice system who have an addiction disease, but getting them help. We have to make sure that we have a strategy to keep drugs out of our schools, to protect our most vulnerable population, our children. And we have to address the issue of, you know, how these drugs are coming into the state of Maryland and how our law enforcement agencies are going to work collectively to slow that down. And then finally, and most importantly, we have sick and injured, right? Those are the people that have the addiction. They need to be treated. You know, and that's why we have to focus on expanding our access to treatment.
So you said you're close to unveiling an action plan. Can you tell me what's in it?
So the action plan is simply identifying those initiatives that we need to get behind in Maryland to push fast and furious on to try to begin bending the curve. You know, ultimate goal is to eliminate just one more fatal overdose. Hopefully have one more person, when confronted with that decision of whether to take a drug or not take a drug, to just walk away You know, we're looking at those initiatives that are going to make a difference in just reducing the number of fatal and non-fatal overdoses in Maryland. And that action plan is going to be very tactical. It's going to identify initiatives. It's going to the initiatives are going to be born out of looking at measures, data, and we're going to be able to measure effectiveness on those issues. That's going to take us, that's going to address the short-term effort here. But what we're really dealing with is a long-term issue. This is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And so we're going to be rapidly looking to a lot of very smart individuals to help us draft that five-year response plan that drives out, you know, the longer-term initiatives and processes to try to make a difference here.
Clay Stamp is Senior Emergency Management Advisor to Governor Larry Hogan and Director of the Opioid Operational Command Center, the OOCC. We need to take a pause here on the record. When we come back, we'll talk about a synthetic opioid called carfentanil that's claiming lives in Maryland. What can be done to prevent this drug from hitting the streets? I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break. Right back.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. The number of deaths from heroin in Maryland far exceeds those caused by alcohol, cocaine, or even prescription opioids. In March, Governor Hogan declared a state of emergency. The General Assembly also took up the opioid overdose issue with legislation to put naloxone in school nurses' offices and another bill setting new penalties for distributing the synthetic opioid fentanyl. I'm speaking with Clay Stamp, Senior Emergency Management Advisor to Governor Hogan. Stamp is leading the state's response to the opioid emergency. Recently, several deaths attributed to overdoses of the synthetic opioid carfentanil in Anne Arundel and Frederick counties. How much more dangerous is this drug, carfentanil, than heroin?
The short answer is it's significantly more dangerous. But we're dealing with a lot of unknowns here. We have individuals that are taking the drug fentanyl, and they're maneuvering the chemicals in it and adjusting it and adjusting potency and cutting that into heroin and everything else and just selling it. And you don't know what you're getting. But, I mean, the short answer is that carfentanil is a lot more powerful than just regular fentanyl, and just a little bit of it can just be fatal.
And is it your impression that those who deal drugs are deliberately amping up how much fentanyl and carfentanil is in the mix?
Absolutely.
Because?
This is a supply and demand business. And it's sad, but certainly, I mean, this is something that people are doing intentionally, and they're marketing it.
What is the point of entry for synthetic opioids like fentanyl and carfentanil?
I can't answer that, Sheila.
Is that going to be part of
Yes.
the plan that you're going to put
oh,
together?
Oh, absolutely, yes. So our partnership with our federal and state and local law enforcement officials, to include the U.S. Attorney and many others at the federal level, are aggressively engaged in trying to identify where these materials are coming from and trying to interdict them from entering our communities. And I can assure you that already my engagement with these organizations, they are working tirelessly to try to identify and curb the flow of these, frankly, poisons from entering our community.
Is it true that naloxone, which we've come to count on to counteract a heroin overdose some other opioid overdoses, that naloxone sometimes is not sufficient to assist someone if they've used fentanyl or carfentanil, that it just can't overwhelm the toxicity of those drugs?
Sure. The administration of naloxone to somebody who has an opioid overdose is a specific dosage. which is normally designed for normally prescribed doses of opioids. When you have the introduction of carfentanil, that's an extreme dose. So the dose of Narcan would most likely not be sufficient. And so that's why your normal Narcan that you have being distributed through pharmacies or with community groups would not be effective on somebody that has taken carfentanil.
We've talked to Dr. Lena Nguyen, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, about the cost of naloxone having risen so much. Is that, will addressing the availability and the cost of it also be part of what your plan will address?
Sure. So our efforts in Maryland through the Opioid Operational Command Center and working with our governor, lieutenant governor, is to look at this situation comprehensively. And so we want to make sure that we look at the availability of naloxone because that is a life-saving drug. And it is important because it gives us potentially another chance to reach a victim where they would not have that chance if they weren't given that life-saving drug. So the availability of the medication is something that we are very interested in.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Clay Stamp, Senior Emergency Management Advisor to Governor Larry Hogan. Stamp is leading the state's response to the opioid overdose epidemic, which the governor has declared a state of emergency. The unit you head, the OOCC, will be providing assistance to local opioid intervention teams. What are you hearing from your partners on the local level about the impact and what they need?
So in any emergency situation or crisis, you have a lead organization. So if it's a transportation issue, it's at the head of the roads department of transportation. In this case, it's a public health officer. And one of the challenges that we face in emergency management is when you have a developing situation, an emergency that ends up becoming a crisis, that organization that is working so hard to resolve the issue, It's very hard for them to realize that they need to flick the switch, pull the fire alarm, and say, we need help from the whole emergency management system. So, you know, what we're doing right now is moving very quickly to have our local emergency managers wrap their services, the whole community, around that public health officer, because the public health officers are in the lead in this situation because it is a public health crisis. So, you know, what we're hearing is just the realization from our emergency managers who are supporting this process, we're hearing things like this crisis is tearing our communities apart. And there's energy, there's community groups, there are people that want to make a difference. That's the good news, because in my experience over the years, when you put a lot of good people in a room and they're passionate, there's nothing we can't do. And to see the mobilization of a lot of good people, I believe good things can happen. I believe we can increase that access to care for those people that have the disease of addiction. I believe that our law enforcement officers can do a better job on the top end of this thing, right? I believe that we can go into our schools and reach the most vulnerable of our communities, our elementary school children, and teach them the importance of making good decisions and preparing them for when they go into that middle school experience, the gauntlet. So what I'm hearing from the local level is that kind of an excitement that the conversation has gotten to the point where the governor of the state of Maryland has said, this is a crisis. We're going to do what we have to do, bar nothing, to make a difference here.
You've made a couple of references to best practices. Tell me about some efforts you've identified as best practices.
Under the leadership of County Executive Steve Shue in Anne Arundel County and his fire chief, they created a protocol working with their mobile crisis team in Anne Arundel County. The mobile crisis team is the group that is able to take people and get them into the right treatment. All you have to do is go knock on the door of a fire station and you can get treatment. Everybody in their communities knows where their firehouses are, right? That's a best practice. We could spread that throughout Maryland. Baltimore City Police Department has instituted this LEAD program. It's a police diversion program where they're not just arresting people that have addiction issues, but they're out there with them and they're funneling them into a care model instead of arresting them, right? we're seeing in our local jails across Maryland, people that have been incarcerated and have come off of opioids, they're being given medications before they're released, and they're counseled so that they can then be put into treatment. We're seeing that happen in Maryland. So these are just a few things that are good things that are happening that we must just spread, and there are many more.
Well, I hope you'll keep in touch with us as you lead this fight.
It's a fight worth fighting. Every life matters.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Clay Stamp is Senior Emergency Management Advisor to Governor Larry Hogan and Director of the Opioid Operational Command Center, the OOCC. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we've got more information about the OOCC and the state's new website, Before It's Too Late. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.